This is a CBC podcast.
Support for delivery of this podcast comes from the all-new 2008 Cadillac CTS. Be an original. Visit Cadillac.gm.ca.
It's Tuesday, October 30th. The Dalai Lama, Tibet's spiritual leader, says there was no political agenda for his meeting with Stephen Harper. Currently, so when the Prime Minister put the meeting's agenda to a confidence vote, the Dalai Lama abstained. This is The Current Podcast.
Hello, I'm Anna Maria Tremonti. You're listening to The Current. He is gentle, peaceful, and self-deprecating, but his mere presence stirs up controversy, diplomatic crises, and fawning celebrities. The 14th Dalai Lama sat down for an official meeting with Prime Minister Stephen Harper yesterday. His visit to Canada follows a trip to the United States, where the Tibetan spiritual leader met with President George Bush and received a Congressional Gold Medal. Those fighting for Tibetan independence see these meetings as a positive step in their bid for freedom from Chinese rule, despite the fact that the Dalai Lama himself insists he has no political agenda.
I always admire this country, now multiracial, multiculture, multi-religions. So Chinese officials, I think, should learn more from your ministry how to work for promotion of unity on the basis of mutual respect. Actually, my visit here, no particular political agenda, not there. My main interest or my main commitment is promotion of human value, promotion of religious harmony on behalf of many, many groups of people who suffer under human rights violation.
Well, that was the 14th Dalai Lama speaking at a press conference in Ottawa yesterday. His trip and his meeting with Prime Minister Stephen Harper has drawn fierce, if predictable, criticism from China, which is now warning of dire consequences in a news conference yesterday. More surprising is similar criticism from Canadians like Harry Sterling, a former diplomat who thinks Tibet is best left in Chinese hands. Harry Sterling is at his home in Ottawa this morning. Hello.
Good morning.
Why do you believe Tibet is better off under China?
Well, actually, I should preface my remarks by saying that articles that I've written about the Dalai Lama also, though, are focusing on this subject of whether or not leaders such as Prime Minister Harper should let their personal whims and biases and ideology influence their actions, including when it undermines national interests of Canada.
Let's talk about the diplomatic side of this for a minute then. So what you're saying is that what Canada is doing, it should not be doing with the Dalai Lama?
In my mind, this is not just about the Dalai Lama. It's about Prime Minister Harper. There's been a series of things which have raised questions concerning, you know, his objectivity and the soundness of his approach to foreign policy, including, you know, his statements back in the time of the conflict between Israel and Hezbollah, which, you know, stunned many people when he called that devastation in Lebanon measured. But
let's stick to his meeting with the Dalai Lama.
To me, many of these people who say, you know, they're trying to represent and stand up for religious freedom and democracy, they seem to ignore, you know, that despite the sophistication and charm of the Dalai Lama, who is a very likable individual, he and his predecessors ruled their country as a personal fiefdom. And this is a country which was a theocratic state, and there was widespread illiteracy. So for people to say that, you know, that, and also this religion, of course, believes in reincarnation, so that the Dalai Lama was chosen when he was 2 years old by signs. These people who say that this is what they're in favor of seem to be ignoring the reality of what Tibet was like. It had no democracy. Only very recently, the Tibetan community in northern India had sort of the first signs of democracy, and yet they're standing up for this, and many of these people are actually anti-communist as opposed to somebody in favor of the Tibetan religion and freedom, you know, of human rights.
Well, let's look at what the Dalai Lama has published himself in terms of what he would see as an autonomous Tibetan government. He has said he would not sit in government where religion and state would be separate, and that a parliament would be made up of a multi-party system. So is it not possible that even though he comes from the background of a place that was theocratic when he was there, that is it not possible that an autonomous Tibet would evolve into a more modern society if given the chance?
Well, I would certainly hope so, and it's one of the things that people should bear in mind is that when they talk about China's oppression of Tibet, they have to realize that China itself is slowly evolving. One hopes that the economic prosperity and progress that is now becoming obvious is going to be matched at some point by a change in the Chinese leadership's policy towards human rights, the rule of law, and there's much that has to be done in that area. But Tibet has always been overseen by China, whether it was the Mongols or the Manchus in the 18th century, and China, in Beijing at least, considers that Tibet is part of China, and if they're going to progress, they should be progressing together.
Well, what indications do you see that China is evolving in a way that would defend human rights, that would actually bring progress?
For example, on the first level, they have started to have open elections and certain municipal elections. For example, there can be more than one approved candidate, which is a tiny step forward, but slowly but surely there's starting to be signs that freedom of expression and freedom of to criticize, including in the environment, is becoming tolerated. All of these things are evolution. You know, it's like in Canada, we once had rules against the native people being able to drink alcohol. Women didn't even have the right to vote. They weren't considered people till the war. So every society evolves, and slowly China is evolving.
You have written that Stephen Harper, his meeting with the Dalai Lama undermines Canadian interests. What interests are you referring to?
All kinds of different interests. For example, trade, that's our fourth largest export market. But also Canada is interested in getting more tourists from China. And these kinds of things are central decisions of Beijing. If they are irritated enough by, Stephen Harper having this meeting and having the media there publicizing it, it's only going to possibly influence those who have to decide about whether or not they want to allow more tourism to Canada, because that's an enormous growing market.
And, well, so China has held a news conference actually warning of dire consequences, but not being specific. At the same time,
what they mean by that.
I mean, how much of that is bluster?
I think a lot of it is based on the fact that they understandably, by their definition, have had someone stick their finger in their eye unnecessarily, and they don't like it. But there's also other things they can do. For example, Canada would like to be on the United Nations Security Council, and China, of course, being one of the five permanent members, when the vote comes in 2010, could decide, have a long memory as to what happened this month in Ottawa.
And are you saying then that that Canada needs to bow to what the Chinese think?
No. In the past, Canadian governments have always tried, when it was possible, to influence other countries to do things that Canada thought were the right thing to do. But they would do this in a more polite way, and they wouldn't publicize something very provocative, because as you look at it, Prime Minister Martin, he deliberately met the Dalai Lama in 2004 in the Archbishop of Ottawa's residence, and it was a very short meeting, and it was considered to be based on the Dalai Lama's religious position. But Stephen Harper has deliberately had a meeting in his own office with the press in attendance, and this is sort of indicative of some of the people in his party who are pro-Tibet for political ideological reasons. Not
but some would say that Mr. Harper's being more open with how his government sees Tibet and the Dalai Lama. Instead of hiding it.
You could say, and it might even be true that he actually believes that, you know, the religious aspect is very important. But if you see the other things that he's been doing lately, like the statements on Lebanon and then going to Europe and extolling our environmental policy, which people are deriding as a sham, there's this personal element that keeps coming into something that ought to be based on more rational, you know, and sound thinking.
Okay. Well, Harry Sterling, thank you for speaking to me today.
Yeah, nice speaking to you.
Harry Sterling is a former Canadian diplomat. He spoke to us from Ottawa. You are listening to The Current on CBC Radio 1 and on Sirius Satellite Radio 137. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti. Well, many people, of course, disagree with Harry Sterling's view of what's good for Tibet and good for China and Canada, especially people like Dermot Travis, who helped organize the Dalai Lama's visit to Canada. Dermot Travis is the executive director of the Canada-Tibet Committee. He's in Ottawa. Good morning.
Good morning, Anna Maria.
Well, how do you react to the suggestion that that Tibet might be actually best left under Chinese rule?
Well, I think that probably asking the Tibetans who had cattle prods used on them last week, the families of Tibetans who were killed by the Chinese military in the past 2 weeks for peaceful demonstrations, would be better than I to answer that question.
Well, if we're talking about that kind of abuse, is meeting with the Dalai Lama for a few minutes in the PMO enough?
I think it begins when taken into context with other meetings and the progress that the Tibetan movement is making worldwide. It begins to send in a message, and we saw the reaction from the Chinese embassy yesterday. The message is certainly being delivered. We would wish that the Chinese government would hear the message and begin to respond accordingly, not with crackdowns.
Now, I want you to speak to Mr. Sterling's concerns that, in fact, Tibet at one point was under theocratic rule. The Dalai Lama was part of that theocratic rule, that in fact, Tibet doesn't know a real democracy.
Well, I think you touched on it in one of your questions regarding what's happening today with the Tibetan community in India regarding the Tibet government in exile, which is a democratically elected government, with the Dalai Lama's positions on how he sees his future role in an autonomous Tibet within China. I also think Mr. Sterling is using a baffling historical argument to try to make a point in 2007. He talked about widespread illiteracy in Tibet in the early 1900s, leading up to the Chinese invasion. We could look at any country in the world and make a similar argument for a similar point in time. I don't think that we need to go back 50, 60, 200 years to try to rewrite history for a modern purpose in 2007, when we should be first and foremost focused on China's human rights record, the lack of progress regarding democratic reform, and China's refusal to negotiate seriously with the representatives of the Dalai Lama to bring about a lasting solution to the Tibet question.
And so how significant was the meeting yesterday between the Prime Minister and the Dalai Lama?
I think the reaction demonstrates that there was a great deal of significance. I know that there is widespread support among Canadians for the meeting that took place yesterday. We see it as a start, not the end. We're going to continue to do our work to see progress brought about on this very important situation.
Let's talk a little bit about the concerns that have been raised, and they're a little more muted, but they are about investment in China. Is it enough for Canada to extend honorary Canadian citizenship to the Dalai Lama? Should we be doing more? After all, Bombardier, which is a Canadian company that enjoys Canadian government largesse, built the railroad into Tibet. Should the government be restricting investment? Should it be restricting certain business deals in China?
Well, I was interested by a response that Mr. Sterling gave regarding the fact that Canada usually, in his mind, exercises its diplomacy in far more subtle ways. I remember when Lester Pearson went to the United States to denounce the U.S. involvement in Vietnam under President Johnson. President Johnson wasn't happy with that critique. It didn't damage U.S.-Canadian relations. Certainly, the Prime Minister Martin met with the Dalai Lama in 2004. Trade and tourism between China and Canada increased following that meeting, despite the same bluster that we heard from the Chinese embassy yesterday.
Well, is that a good thing? That's what I'm asking you.
Well, in terms of investment, in terms of development in China, yes, there are some aspects of it which can be good and which can be positive. So in regards to the railway, as an example, railways in and of themselves are not bad. However, it's the use of the railway that would concern us in terms of mining developments in an eco-sensitive region, in terms of military expansion within the Tibetan Plateau, which ultimately could be a threat to neighboring countries, and ethnic re-engineering in the Tibetan Plateau, where you now find Tibetans a minority on their own territory.
But at some point, if Canadian businesses are involved with in China, and China continues to have these practices that you disagree with, don't Canadian businesses have an obligation? Doesn't, if the Canadian government says that this matters, shouldn't something change?
Yes. Most definitely. And we've been advocates of the Canadian government adopting a corporate social responsibility policy.
And where is that? Is it happening?
There's progress being made. It is slow. There was a report issued by the federal government in March of this year. There are many NGOs from many different areas who are working day and night to see that report adopted by the federal government, so that Canadian corporations would have standards when they operate overseas, not only in China, but in other countries as well.
And because the one thing that confuses me is we talk about all of this and China says very strong things like warning of dire consequences. Canada takes a stand for which Mr. Harper is praised by most people, criticized by a smaller group of people. And yet nothing really changes on the ground. So the question becomes, what does all of this do? Is it just a back and forth with government officials and people saying things, but nothing ever changes? Well, how much effect does any of this have?
What the Chinese have to see is that this was not an isolated meeting with Prime Minister Harper yesterday. This followed a meeting with the German Chancellor. It followed a meeting with the U.S. President. And of course, yesterday's meeting, not only with the Prime Minister, but the Governor General. I think that China has to realize that the concessions that the West has made for the past few decades to try to bring China into the global community have not been satisfied. They have been met with crackdowns in China. The West is now raising the standard, the expectations on China's conduct. And that hopefully China will see this as an opportunity to cut the threats and start the discussions.
And again, do you see that? Do you see indications of that?
Well, we will certainly be reaching out in the coming months, both to the Chinese embassy and to the federal government. It's not a short-term program. This is something that's going to take a lot of effort. It's going to take a lot of work. We would hope that the bluster that China often demonstrates in regards to these issues would be reduced so that we can actually discuss some of the substantive issues.
Now, Tibet wants autonomy. Will autonomy and autonomy within China really be enough for the Tibetan people?
Well, I think if China is prepared to enter into the dialogue that has been taking place, but with a more serious approach, a desire to actually reach a solution, autonomy will work. If China continuously rejects that opportunity that exists today, that is before them today, then you run a risk of others within the Tibetan movement who advocate for an independent Tibet having a stronger voice. This is a chance for China to have a united country where human rights, democratic reform are accepted standards on a daily basis. But what we do have to see is a change of attitude by the Chinese government.
Okay, Mr. Travis, thank you for speaking with me today.
My pleasure.
Dermot Travis is the executive director of the Canada-Tibet Committee. He spoke to us from our Ottawa studio. Well, that's all we have for this podcast. You can listen to The Current weekday mornings on CBC Radio 1 right after the 8:30 news, as well as on Sirius Satellite Radio 137. To find out more about our program, visit cbc.ca/thecurrent. If you have any thoughts on what you're hearing on The Current, share them with us. Send us your comments. You can email us at thecurrent, all one word, thecurrent@cbc.ca. Our mailing address is Post Office Box 500, Station A, Toronto, M5W1E6. Or call us collect 1-877-287-7366. To subscribe to other great CBC Radio podcasts, check out cbc.ca/podcasting. Thanks for listening. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti.
Hi, I'm Jesse Brown. I'm the host of Search Engine, a new CBC Radio show that is all about how the internet is changing politics and culture. It's not a gadget show. We don't really care much about technology so much as we care about the effect that technology is having on the world that we live in. All of the surprising and significant and funny stories that we bring you on Search Engine are about things that are happening right now. In the short time that we've been on the air, we've already become the CBC's most popular news podcast in the States. So come find out why. Subscribe to our podcast on CBC's podcasting page or through iTunes.